Please be seated. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures and leads me beside still waters. He revives my soul and guides me along right pathways for his name's sake. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You spread a table before me in the presence of those who trouble me. You have anointed my head with oil, and my cup is running over. Surely your goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Good Shepherd Sunday. Good Shepherd at this confirmation event. Most of us have grown accustomed to a certain iconography of the Christian faith. The cross upon which a suffering Jesus hangs, or from which a triumphant Jesus reigns, or simply an empty cross, halos around the heads of the saints. The evangelist's symbols, that is Matthew's angel, Mark's lion, Luke's ox, and the gospeler John's eagle, the Virgin Mary with her lily, the Eucharistic elements of bread and wine. These are the images that we think represent for us elements of the Christian faith. But in a book entitled Picturing the Bible, the earliest Christian art by a classicist whose name is Jeffrey Speier, we find out that at the time of the early church, none of these images existed. The time of the early Christian church, around the year 200. This was when, though, Christian images began to emerge on the painted walls of the catacombs in Rome, and on personal items such as lamps and rings, because we want to keep those images of our faith close to us. These images, as he looked at those images, the Christian images that emerged during that time, he discovered that they did not include crosses, halos, depictions of important people, loaves of bread, or even cups of wine. None of that. What they did include was the image of a young, beardless shepherd standing facing towards the viewer, carrying a lamb over his shoulder, similar to what you have on the front of your service leaflet today. And I requested that that be put there today. The Good Shepherd is one of the earliest images Christians used to express who their God was. The picture itself, the one I just described, was actually a traditional pagan image commonly found on Roman sarcophagi or coffins, an image alluding to a Roman story meant to evoke the peacefulness of the afterlife. And so Christians did then what they do in many times. They take secular images or images that are not their own and then repurpose them. And so what the Christian artist did was to appropriate this figure and invest it with a purely Christian significance, the kind of significance we heard in the words of our gospel today, in which Jesus asserts that he is the good shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep, an image that he, of course, draws from the Hebrew scriptures, from David as shepherd, from God as shepherd in the 23rd Psalm. And so this early image of Jesus and of the Good Shepherd was not, of course, a literal depiction of Christ, any more than it's a literal depiction of Christ that we see in our stained glass windows throughout this diocese or in those beautiful framed pictures we sometimes have in the room where children's formation happens. It was instead an image appropriated from the culture of the time, a young beardless shepherd carrying a lamb across his shoulders, invested and expressive of a new meaning. God, Christians of the time were saying, had come to be with God's people as the good shepherd, the one who leads and feeds his own, The one, in fact, who was so connected to his own, and this is what Jesus adds to the picture, that he would give his life for them. In many, many churches earlier today, preachers have been struggling to say something meaningful about this ancient image of God as the Good Shepherd. Many began with questions about its relevance for us today, understandably, in that most of us live lives far removed from the nomadic lives of shepherds and sheep. Though at this at a visitation this morning at St. Margaret's Cedar Cottage, a fellow came up and said, "I was a shepherd for 2 years." So there we go. But the greater point, and I think the more challenging point that people have about this image and that needs to be addressed, is that you and I don't like thinking of ourselves as sheep in need of a shepherd, particularly if any of us have known sheep. We don't like thinking of ourselves that way. This is because to go there is somehow to cop to our own need to depend on something bigger and more powerful than ourselves. And focusing on the Gospel of John's specific and unique assertion that the Good Shepherd is the one who lays down his life for the sheep, that image makes us, encourage us to admit that we might even need something called a Savior, someone who would come after us and risk his or her life for us. Can we, who are competent, grown-up, 21st century people, people so adept, so connected, so communicative, so creative, so awake, can we still need and be fed by this image? Know this reality, that our God is one who leads and feeds us, and yes, lays his life down for us, his own, whom he knows by name. This is what I believe, that far from dealing a blow to our capable, competent, functioning, and functional selves, this view of God and our ability to rely on a God like this makes it possible to be in the world as our capable, competent, functioning, and functional selves. For in my experience, unless we have some place to go where we do not have to be capable, where we do not have to have it all together, where we can express our need for guidance from the hand of another, our need for food from the hand of another, our need for dependence on someone or something greater than ourselves, our need even for a Savior, dare I say it. We cannot, unless we can do that, we cannot find the deep strength and confidence in life to be our most capable and creative selves in the midst of our world that asks so very much from us. Paradoxically, then, it is through an appropriate dependence on God and the trust that no matter what, we will not be deserted, that our independence in the world and our confidence comes. It is through our radical dependence upon something or someone who guides, feeds, and leads and gives us all that our capabilities can flower and our best express itself. And of course, this is especially important today because we are confirming, receiving, and reaffirming a new group, a big group, of adults and youth in our Anglican Church. The reason I would ever do this, the reason I would ever participate in this, is to be a part of connecting each and every one of them more deeply to the very God that I describe, the one who guides, feeds, leads, and gives, yes, gives us everything, and the one who, after having done that week after week after week, sends us into the world to do courageous, difficult things in a world that's challenging beyond what we ever thought would it be. When I was walking around in Stanley Park some weekends ago, I saw this kind of dynamic, the dynamic of appropriate dependence and then engaging with a difficult thing. I saw it in action. I saw a mother with her two children, one a little girl of about 3 or 4, and the other a babe in arms. I saw them staked out in a play area near a park bench. I hung around there long enough to listen in on things, by the way. The girl's name was Imogen. Isn't that beautiful? It's an old-fashioned name come back to be with us now. Imogen was dressed in boots and a tutu. It's a look I've never been able to pull off. But on her, it was smashing. So while there, Imogen found a new playmate, an older girl of about 8 or 9, who was there with her father, also on a park bench nearby there. So Imogen was, you know, could hold her on, but in the face of the 8 or 9-year-old who wanted to engage her, there were times when she felt a little overwhelmed. The two girls were having a ball, but from time to time, Imogen would be kind of taken in by that feeling, overwhelmed by her older and more capable playmate. And so every once in a while, Imogen would leave her new playmate, and simply go and stand by her own mother, who did not say anything to her, but simply placed her hand on her daughter's back. Time and time again, Imogen went to her mother for that reassuring touch, and time and time again, having touched back to her place of safety and acceptance, Imogen returned to her rough and tumble new friend to hold her own. In speaking of the image of the Good Shepherd and its roots in the Jewish tradition, particularly as it's expressed in our Psalm 23, biblical scholar Walter Brueggemann comments that these dimensions of the God of the Jewish people as the one who leads and feeds, dimensions that set the stage for the Christian appropriation and expansion of the image as the one who will lay down his life for his own. Brueggemann comments that these dimensions are in many ways feminine, maternal images that go so well with my story. And so I want to close with the 23rd Psalm again, not the version we find in our prayer book or the one that we sang so beautifully earlier, but instead the version of the Psalm that many of you might know, artist Bobby McFerrin's dedication, translation that he dedicated to his mother. As you hear it in this new way, listen afresh for the one upon whom you can depend, the one who tends to your needs, and from that place sends you and you and you to hold your own in the world. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all I need. She makes me lie down in green meadows. Beside the still waters, she will lead. She restores my soul. She rights my wrongs. She leads me in a path of good things and fills my heart with songs. Even though I walk through a dark and dreary land, there is nothing that can shake me. She has said she won't forsake me. I'm in her hand. She sets a table before me in the presence of my foes. She anoints my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely, surely goodness and kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will live in her house forever and ever.